Ready?
Yeah.
All right. Podcasting from the mega city metropolis of Toronto, you are back in the cave of solitude, and we have our co-founding or our co-founder back with us.
Wow.
It's been, you know how long it's been?
He said 6 months.
It's been since episode 11.
Oh, really? What was that one? Was that the one where we just talked about Star Wars?
No, that was the one where we did the starting 11.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, it dumped all over my list.
It was a good list.
Haters gonna hate.
Reintroduce yourself to the listeners since it's been such a long time.
Well, I am the now official bathroom furniture salesman, Jay Siegel.
Welcome back. And how's that going for you?
So boring. But it's fun. I learned about 8 whole inch centers and stuff. I don't know.
That is a very awkward segue into what you've been doing, but I like it. That's good. And you brought your sister with us too. To the cave. She's silently laughing in the background. Just hi, Michaela.
Hi.
Feel free to chip in anytime you want to, or what's the word?
Chime in.
Chime in. That's the word. Chip in. I saw the chocolate chip cookies on the floor. So welcome back. It's nice to have you back, Jay.
Nice to be back.
So what have you been up to, other than selling faucets for 8-inch holes?
Well, I'm done my first year in the social service work program, getting ready to go back in September.
Do you miss being in school?
Yeah, I was telling Michaela yesterday that the first semester was like the greatest schedule I've had in my life, that I wish I had appreciated it more. College kids appreciate your schedules.
Mm-hmm. But now that you're working, you're making money, right? That's good.
Yeah, it's not as fun, but...
Yeah. So what's it like selling plumbing supplies? I mean, I'm a little bit in tune with the plumbing trade itself, but for you, what's it like to sell the actual product? Is it slow? Do people come in with very... want to blow your brains out?
On average, you get 3 different types of customers. You have the first ones that have a really detailed, already drawn up diagram. Most of the time, it's on a USB.
That's a good customer to have, though.
Yeah, they come in well-prepared. They ask for specific measurements and stuff. But they know exactly what they're looking for, and if you don't have what they're looking for, they take it personally. And it's really weird. So, like, this guy came in, and he wanted an L-shaped vanity, and I was like, well, we don't have them. And he was like, why are you even in this business? And he left. So, that was interesting. Then the second type of customer we get is the type of person who is just there looking and has to check with their spouse what they're actually looking for. So it's like, well, why did you come? Okay, that's cool. And the last type, just look in the window and kind of walk away because they aren't interested.
Mm. So when you see that stuff now and you go back to your own home or to your family's home, does it make any difference to you of what you have in your own house now that you see all of these different specifications of what you could have? Or do you just want water on, water off? Because that's how I am.
Yeah.
I don't know. The generic...
As soon as you get into like the $10,000 toilet level, it's like, well...
What does that do? I want to know. What do you get for a $10,000
toilet?
Not anything close to anything in the Cave of Solitude, but I want to know, on record, what does a $10,000 toilet get you?
So the $10,000 toilet, it's Toto brand. We do actually have one. I don't even know how our manager managed to bring that in, but it's fun. I've sat on a $10,000 toilet now. Anyways, so it has a dual flush system, which doesn't sound super fancy. It's like the one for lighter, two. But then they say it's like baked porcelain glaze or something, so it... stuff slides off easier to pull it elegantly. And then they have, so your standard toilet bowl has like the flush system in the front where it just floods down. This one has like 2 jet streams. They call it their cyclonic action. Cyclonic. I didn't even know that was a word. I think Toto invented it for their toilet. But basically, so they like blast it around. I want to see it in action because it sounds nuts, because they're like, this high power flushing will blow your mind, and I'm like, yeah, I want to see it. So then it's just like cyclones around the bowl and flushes.
Is it heated?
Yes. And, okay, the thing that makes it $10,000, the piece de resistance, there's an actual, like, boudet part in the back that comes out after you press a button. The seat is heated, yeah, sorry to answer that. It comes out in the back, shoots temperature-controlled water, you set the temperature on it, and then it shoots it at you, and then it retracts back into the toilet. So it's like, what? You just sit there and everything is done for you. All they need is like a high-power wind stream to dry it, and you're good. Toto, step your game up.
So that's our episode for this week. Thank you for listening as we talk about plumbing supplies.
Called the golden toilet.
So, cutting the crap and getting out of the way. Nice pun. What else has been going on for you? Movies you've seen? Have you been keeping up with stuff that's coming out in the theaters? What are your thoughts on stuff you've seen? Any books you've read? Like, catch us up.
So I have seen the new Avengers. Thought it was fantastic. Very good. I actually liked it better than the first one.
Yeah?
Yeah. For me, they seemed more like a connected team there. All their jokes, their back and forth or whatever, seemed more natural. None of this forced first movie. Not that the first wasn't good, too.
Took you a while to watch the first, though, right? Like, you put it off for a bit.
Yeah.
You were one of the few people who, like, made a decision. I'm not sold on this whole thing.
Yeah, it took some time.
But you liked it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, after I accept the whole thing. It's exciting. Saw the Jurassic Park. Loved it. It was as cheesy as I was expecting, but it was what I was expecting. You got to see dinosaurs eat people and Chris Pratt being Chris Pratt, doing what he does best, looking awkward and funny.
It was good. I liked Jurassic World too. It was, I liked the original Jurassic Park movie. I don't like the sequels as much, like Jurassic Park 3, I'm not a fan of. But I was really, it was a good popcorn movie, perfect summer blockbuster. Are you surprised that it broke the records that it did? Did you think it would have done that?
I didn't even
know it did. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it broke, I think, the first weekend for sure. It's the highest grossing. I don't know if it's topped. I should check that up. But I know that it was definitely on its way to breaking records. It's like the number one for opening weekend.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive when you consider stuff that's come out recently.
Yeah.
Are you excited for Ant-Man?
I was. And then I talked to these two friends of mine. They didn't seem totally sold on it, so I'm more hesitant now. But I'll still probably see it at some point.
It's a Marvel movie. It'll be good.
All right.
It'll be good. Don't worry.
Okay.
Don't listen to those people.
Yeah.
How about Fantastic Four? Have you seen anything about that? I saw the trailer for it recently, the latest one.
Didn't see the latest one, but I saw the first one. I love the guy they chose as Reed Richards.
Yeah.
He's the guy from Whiplash.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he has potential to be a good actor.
A lot of people have, like, reservations about it. They're upset with the casting. They don't like how Doctor Doom looks. I'm not a big Fantastic Four fan to be able to say this is wrong, that's not right, but I like that it doesn't look like a coloring book. Because the last one, everybody, yeah, you know, they had their costume, they had all those things that seemed like it was lifted straight off of a comic book, which in essence seems good, but I don't know.
Now I've become more accustomed to slightly more realistic. You look at like Captain America's outfit, it's more of that military. Yeah. I don't know if that's what you're getting at, but it looks more like modern-day superhero than, like, the actual skin-tight spandex underwear rockin'.
Well, when you think of Fantastic Four, right, like, what happened to them is not a good thing.
Yeah.
It's like,
kind of cool.
Yeah. It's.
But, yeah.
Really, it was a horrible thing that happened to them, and the way that they should deal with it shouldn't necessarily just be like, hey, we've got superpowers, like...
Yeah, you'd probably want to get it checked out.
They're in a way, they're like monsters, essentially, right? Yeah. That can be superheroes.
I think the Thing got the short end of that stick, though.
Yeah, a little bit. But I like that the movie kind of has that ominous feel, like something bad is actually going down. Yeah. So I don't have any expectations for it, which is, I think, better than in the past. I was excited that it was just a comic book movie coming out.
Yeah. Oh, actually, okay, space-wise, not superhero, but in the kind of sci-fi canon.
Yeah.
There's a movie coming out called The Martian. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for it.
Have I? I'm trying to think. I might have, and I don't remember it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
It's based on this book. I haven't read all of it. Actually, just one of my friends read me clips of the book, so I got probably about a solid half of the book read to me. And it's about this astronaut, Mark Watney, who gets left behind on a Mars mission.
Yes, I've seen that. I've seen that trailer.
If the movie is anything like the book, it's going to be fantastic. Like, such a cool premise, and it's the, I saw a little interview with the author, and he said it's like 99% based on,
yeah, it looks amazing.
Like, science, and 1% based on, like,
sci-fi. Who was the actor? Was it Matt Damon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Matt Damon.
Because I know that Matt Damon was in an Interstellar, so I had saw the trailer for it in the theater.
Yeah, he's just playing all the astronauts now.
And I was like, was it him or am I confusing it for Interstellar? You saw Interstellar.
Yep.
Did you like that?
I did.
So does this give you that same type of...
No. No. This is Interstellar's very much like a... Well, it's like a Christopher Nolan, you know?
Yeah,
it's like
one of those, like, got the twisty...
Gonna, like, blow your mind.
Yeah.
This one is... It's very, I think, breaking it down and not really doing it justification. It's just a survival thing. But
it
brings, like, a lot of... It's basically, like, realistically, how is this guy going to survive on Mars for, I think, 4 years? And it's, like, the things he does are, like, what?
That's cool.
It's really cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I did see that trailer, and it did look intense. Every time I see those... Like, those Gravity or Interstellar or... You didn't like Gravity. I didn't see Gravity.
Hated Gravity.
But, like, it doesn't seem as appealing as when you see, like, those science fiction movies that are, like, adventure and all this fantasy. It looks completely terrifying to be, like, in this void of... You're just lost.
Yeah, it's almost like you get these two different aspects of space in a movie. You get the Star Wars Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, we're flying at a million miles per hour through a ship, but, hey, everything's good.
Every planet
or you
can
get
take
like
an
the,
hour to get to.
Hyper-realistic, like, Apollo 13, yeah. Like, Apollo 13 style, where you're just like, oh, man, this is terrible.
It's the most frightening thing
in
the world.
It's weird, actually. There's no, like, in-between. And I don't know how you would do an in-between.
Have you ever been to NASA in Florida?
No, I wish. That'd be fantastic.
What's it called? Kennedy Space Center?
No.
I went there once.
What?
And I saw how small some of those re-entry shuttles are.
Uh-huh. So scary.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Like, I think it would be terrifying.
It's so small.
Yeah.
Like, smaller than a seat in an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And you got all these controls surrounding you that you have to know everything that they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It those type of things intrigue me, but they frighten me, too. How about music?
Hmm.
Any new albums you've listened to? Concerts you've went to?
I went to my first ever metal show. It was a friend of mine's sister playing the Darkstone Crows. They were pretty good.
Yeah?
I don't know. Like, I don't know tons about the metal genre, but they seemed tight. All their timings were on point, and I think in metal, that's like a really big thing. I got invited to this other one where this doctor from Toronto flies in a few bands from Japan, and... They play here, so that was really cool. It's a different experience, some weird sounds, but some also really, really fantastic stuff too. And then just 2 days ago, saw Interpol.
How
was
that?
They're fantastic.
Yeah. Best concert you've been to?
No.
No?
No. But definitely up there, like, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, sounds like a stupid question, but what was it that was so fantastic about them?
First off, I didn't realize, so their lead singer, Paul Banks, did not realize how phenomenal his voice is, because I was explaining to you earlier that on the albums, he has that very monotone, kind of Joy Division-esque voice, where it's like the flat, like it fits the music really well,
yeah.
But live, he does stuff that I guess you wouldn't want to hear on like a studio-produced album, because you'd be like, listening to it multiple times, we'd be like, okay, that gets annoying, because at one point he goes, like, really high, another point he goes really low, but it was just, like, fantastic, because he did it all live, so he'd, like, go to these notes where you were like, what, I didn't even know that was in your repertoire, or, like, it was really cool that way, and then just also really high energy, because when I think of Interpol, despite it being fast, I think of more chill-ish music, like, that kind of, like, menacing almost.
There's a vibe to it, an ominous vibe
like,
to it.
You wouldn't picture people, if you picture an Interpol concert, how do you picture people moving?
Side to side.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I thought too. Lots of weird
body. But there
body...
are some songs from them that can get you going, but yeah, not much.
Not much. But like, I was picturing that too. I was like, we'll be swaying and some weird like body lurching, you know, that like odd kind of sporadic dancing people do. There were so many songs where all you wanted to do was be jumping up and down, and like, at one point people were pushing, and I was like, what? How? How? But it worked. It was fantastic. It was crazy. It was such a high energy show.
Where was it with the...
Danforth Music Hall.
How was the venue?
I've been to two there now, and I like it. It's cool. It's nice. It's very closed feeling. Like, you feel like you're close to the band, and I like that a lot.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, on that same vein of music,
mm-hmm.
we're going to get into the topic of this episode, which is what brought you back to the cave.
Yeah.
We're going to get into our top five favorite albums.
So hard.
It is extremely hard. Because, you know, what was hard for you in choosing them?
So, first off, I took the scenario of Desert Island. These are going to be the five albums I'm listening to for the rest of my life.
That's a good way to do it.
And then, on top of that, I have a very specific standard for albums. Not saying that I don't like them, but for me, what I consider is a perfect album is that each song plays its part. No two songs do the same thing. And then there's not a single song on that album where I'm like, yeah, I'd skip it. Like, if I'm listening to it, I'm listening to the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, did you have a lot to choose from, or was there, it was hard to just slim it down to...
As far as perfect albums, I think I've only, so far, and of course it's, like, different, it's biased and stuff, but perfect albums-wise, I think I only have, like, 11 that, like... are can't be topped. So choosing five from those 11 was where the challenge really was.
Okay.
What about yours?
For me it was tough because I had grown up listening to a specific kind of music, listening to hip hop, and I had so many albums that I had listened to, and I had just in that genre, a bunch of albums that I could have picked as my five favorite albums of all time, because that's what you grew up listening to in, like, those formative years of going to school and just headphones on all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was before the MP3 iPod era, where you just have thousands of songs. So mm-hmm. if you put an album into your disc, man, for those who still remember what that was, or a tape player, you wanted to listen to something, and you would listen from beginning to end. So you'd always had a lot of those albums that I could say, like, I could listen to this from beginning to end.
Yeah.
But now, having changed the type of music that I listen to and making it a little bit more broad, I wasn't sure if it had to be, like, you know, you look at those classic album lists of these are the best albums of this year. So should I pick stuff that I know is actually the best of the best, or stuff that's just my personal favorite, whether or not anyone else thinks it's
great? I hope you went personal favorite then.
No, I did. Okay. I did, but that was the tough part, because you listen to something and you can say, like, okay, I know that this album from this band is probably musically better, their technique,
mm-hmm.
the actual musicians in the band, there's a lot more that they can do.
Yeah.
But it's that album's still not better than this one.
Doesn't resonate with you the same way.
Yeah, and it's one of those tough things to do, because like you said before, like with metal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those musicians are incredible, because they play so fast, and their timing is on, the drummers are like on point.
Yeah.
And what the skill level they have is unparalleled.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think sometimes people know just how good they are as musicians. But then you got other people who, they might not be that great as a guitar player, but their songwriting skills and ability to evoke emotion out of somebody is better.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think country music gets, like, so bashed so hard, because a lot of times, yeah, some of their songwriting and stuff is a little basic, but, like, the tones they do in their voices and stuff, you have to weep. You weep. Yeah. The tears out of your eyes.
Yeah.
Some of the ways they sing, it's like, you're gonna go scratch his pickup truck. You gotta.
So, the one criteria that I try to stick with is picking albums that came out during my lifetime. So I didn't go back to... There were some albums that I would have picked that were from maybe the 60s or 70s. Uh-huh. But I said, you know what? I'm going to try to stick with stuff that came out during my lifetime that I actually lived to hear.
Okay, all five of mine match too. Then, okay. I think. Yeah.
So, I was thinking, should I do every single album? Should I include my hip-hop album? Should I include, am I supposed to say Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band? Because that's the greatest album of all time, and I own it. But is it, you know what I mean? So you're trying to, should I go with a theme? So that was the tough part.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to choose from. So I chose the stuff like you did, where, what can I put in, press play, and play from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Okay, so... why don't you start?
Uh-oh. Okay. So my first one, sticking with the theme, all of mine are taken from basically my top five favorite artists, too.
It's a good point.
Which changes at points, but these ones have all consistently been up there in the past. So my first one is from my favorite band. I know I've mentioned them around you a couple times. Is Disco Ensemble, a band from Finland. This one is possibly one of my favorite albums of all, of like the favorite album.
Just because this could be the number one.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think I have a set number two, but this one, I don't know, it's just pretty powerful. So it's called The Island of Disco Ensemble. I think it's their fourth one that they released. So at this point that it got released, I had already been a fan and had already had them kind of at the top of the bands I listened to. They were kind of number one. So it's just really consistent in their sound. Like, the whole thing plays almost like a movie, if that makes sense. It, like,
There's just a theme to it.
Yeah. Without there actually kind of being a theme. Like, they've outright said it's not a concept album. But just all the tones they use on their guitar... and, like, at one point in one of the opening songs, then the guitarist goes back to the same riff he was doing, but in a later song. So it's, like, that really consistent kind of follow-through. And then, it was the first progressive band and favorite band I ever got into.
How'd you find them?
EA Sports 2004 soundtrack. Yeah. I remember they had this song, it was like nuts, it blew my mind, so I looked them up as a kid on my dad's work computer, and I was terrified, so I deleted the history, but like, blew my mind, so yeah, that's how I got into them, and then...
What would be the genre, like, what would you say their style is?
Progressive rock.
Okay.
And then that album also, just like the cherry on top, has my favorite song by them. Which is Get Some Sleep, and it's like this crazy, makes you want to cry, but gets you like really amped at the same time.
So when you say progressive, are there songs, are they like 10-minute songs? Are they like...
That's what's like kind of cool about them. They have that progressive feeling, like it starts in one place and almost always, especially in this album, it ends in another place. You're like, how did I even get here? But they do that in like 4 or 5 minutes. So it's like...
That's cool.
Yeah, their songwriting is, personally, obviously biased, but is the best I've heard.
Okay.
So there's numero uno.
That's you're going from number one to number five, or just
the random? No, order? The rest of them all just fall in there.
So I try to go with the same type of method, try to see what my favorite bands were, seeing if that was the best way to go about it, because usually it is. See... favorite band for a reason, but I also went with, because some of my favorite bands have albums I love, but there is an album from someone else that might not be my favorite band, but it's one of those you play from beginning to end and it's timeless.
Yeah.
So, for number five, I went with Nirvana. Nevermind. Oh, no. Yeah, I know you don't like Nirvana. Mine are very popular. They're not going to be as
unique. No, that's not what it is at all. I have Green Day on my list.
Oh, okay. So, okay. But yeah, I figured Nirvana would have to make the list. I played it the other day just to, you know, refresh my memory, see what was good about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just timeless, and it ushered in a new era. Yeah. It was the poster child of that era without the intention of being the album it became, because their first album was a complete indie, you know, mild success. Not many people even, and it was a different lineup of a band. Just Kurt Cobain was in it. But then, I mean, you don't really like Nirvana, right?
Personally, not that big, no.
Okay, but when you hear that first track, and you hear the chords of Teen Spirit, it's a whole.
It's an experience.
It is.
Yeah.
It is an experience, and I think it influenced so many people after that. I think in our Weezer episode, right, you said that Rivers Cuomo had wished he had written that song.
Mm-hmm.
And when an album has that type of effect, I mean, I didn't grow up listening to it, but having listened to it now, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated Nirvana for a while for the sake of hating them. Like, I would listen to every other Seattle band that had come out at that time, like Pearl Jam. I was like, Pearl Jam's way better than Nirvana. Yeah. Soundgarden is way better than Nirvana. And they probably are better musicians, but I feel like that album, I don't know.
Yeah, and you David can't deny Grohl the impact. On the drums.
Yeah. Like, the first three songs, you got Smells Like Teen Spirit, In Bloom, and then Come As You Are. And they're all
like iconic songs. Yeah,
classic songs. And I think it's the fact that all of those songs were classic that made them become what it is today. So that'll be my number five.
Alright.
Nirvana.
Fair enough. Alright, so then for my next one, it feels dumb. I feel like I've told you about almost all of these. It's okay. But in fairness, that just means it's consistent. I've told you about them for a reason. So you've heard me talk about the band The Districts. So I'd absolutely put their first album, Telephone, up there, just because it was it's a really unique sound. It's kind of like blues, grassroots, mixed with like a little bit of jazz, some country, folkish, but then very much like rock influences too. And it's just really weird. And then the thing that really like bought me over was learning that they self-produced the entire thing, all themselves, just the five of them. So like, find that really impressive considering how good it sounds. And they don't just have like your standard lineups. Like at one point they bring trumpets in, at one point harmonica. So it's not like they went about basic recordings too. They also brought in these different stuff. And then yeah, it's just it wasn't like any other band I had really heard yet, so.
What would you compare them to? Because I look for all the bands that you recommend. Like, I went and found Thermals album, but I try to find Districts, I try to find Disco Ensemble, I have the hardest time when I go into a music store.
Yeah, well, like.
Because you're such a hipster, and you don't know music
with,
that you can
buy. Oh, brother, with Disco Ensemble, it's tough because they're a Finnish band. I think they've come to the States, like, once in the last, like, 10 years. The Districts are slowly getting bigger.
I have found some stuff from the Districts, but it's been more like their EP.
Yeah. Telephone is hard to track down because it's all self-produced. Okay. I think you can get it on iTunes, though. Like, that's where I bought mine from. But comparing them to, I honestly don't know.
Because you said they have, like, a grassroots, country, bluesy.
But, like, not in ways that you've heard. It's the only words you can use to describe them, but then you think, like.
So are they like, Lumineers, Mumford & Sons, with a little harder rock to it?
Yeah, I guess. I feel like it's doing a disservice comparing them to them, but yeah, it's kind of. It's like that, but it's just, I don't know, they're. their songs are more complex than I'd say your standard Lumineers song.
Okay.
Like, you can tell there's a lot of musical skill going on there. And just, like, his voice, Rob Grote's voice, is, like, super unique. And, like, I don't know. It's just, it's something else. It's something you have to hear, and then you'll kind of understand, like, yeah, you'd have a tough time explaining what their sound is.
Okay, got you. So that's your fourth pick.
Yeah.
Or your second pick. Okay. This is where it got tough for me, because I didn't know what to, at some point, what to leave out. So I think for my fourth, I'm going to go with, this was tough. I had to leave out either the Strokes or the Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, oh.
And those are two of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
So I think I was going to go with, initially, I was going to do Room on Fire from the Strokes.
Excellent album.
Because I bought the first two Strokes albums at the exact same time. So I had no basis of, like, listening to one first and then comparing the second one and realizing that this they're doing the same thing they did the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of listened to them as one, one listening experience. And I felt like if you bought those albums, they could play as a double album. Like, that's how...
Yeah, they lead... The sound is really consistent.
Yeah. So I love both of those first albums, but if I had to say one that I listened to more, might have been Room on Fire.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not my pick. I'm going to go with Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, so misleading. I was about to get so excited. Strokes have one of the perfect albums on my list.
Yeah, and I would say their first two albums are pretty close to both being perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with Arctic Monkeys. Favorite Worst Nightmare. That's their second album.
Okay.
Everything on my list was very close to being each band's second release. So I'm going to go with that one. It's their first album was a classic. It was very much in the same vein of what the Strokes were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out after them, British band Arctic Monkeys. I'm sure everyone knows them now. But then their second album came out immediately after, like a year later. And it was just as good, but you can see the growth in them. Their song structure, their experience. It was more... The first album was like a television show. A really, really good television show that was edgy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was like more cinematic in how they told the stories and how they structured their songs. And it just... You saw the elevation in them, but without changing too much.
Yeah, the fundamentals.
Yeah, and... lyrically, that's one thing about the Arctic Monkeys that I really like about the songwriter is that he's very technical in how he writes. He almost writes them like a rap verse, where everything is very much in its place on purpose, but the way that he says it has a lot to do
mm-hmm.
with his songwriting, which is what I had been described to me once, but I didn't understand it, because I'm like, how do you compare a rock song to how they write a verse there to that, but how much words he puts into his verse and how much he says
mm-hmm.
is very descriptive, and there's a lot of like double meanings to them, so you can keep coming back to it and get something new each time.
Yep.
So that'll be my next pick, Arctic Monkeys.
All right,
back to you.
So for my next one then is Interpol. Their third album, Our Love to Admire. I think it gets overlooked sometimes. People are like, oh yeah, that's an Interpol album too.
You would say that's a perfect album.
To me it is. Like, I don't know.
I'm going to go back and listen to it, because I have it, but I haven't given it, like you said, I overlooked it.
Everything about it. So right from the beginning, Pioneer to the Falls. Like, this album has, I think, four of my five favorite songs by them on it. Right from the beginning, Pioneer to the Falls. Such a classic, like, Interpol. It's like this menacing, sets this like weird tone all the way to the end. I think the last song is called Lighthouse or something, and it's so like eerie and ambient and like, it's just, yeah. But what really got me to pay attention to it was watching an interview with Paul Banks and their guitarist, can't remember his name. But they were talking about how the recording process for Turn On the Bright Lights and, what's the white one called? It's not just Evil. No.
Antics.
Antics. that those ones were really choppy. They would, like, kind of write and record two or three at a time and then go on tour again. With this one, they did it properly. They just sat down and, like, worked out the entire album over and, like, recorded it all in one concise session. So he said that's why he thinks that they got a really consistent tone, and they did.
So that's your favorite Interpol album?
Favorite Interpol album. Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Because I know their first album is considered, like, a benchmark for them. Like, it's a must-own album for if you like music. Like, their first one.
Yeah.
Like, Turn Out the Bright Lights. But it's interesting. I'm going to go back and listen to it now that you've described it that way.
It's one of those things, and you have to pay attention. Because it took me a few listens through to really get into it. But then it pays off. Because you're like, no, all of... Just everything about this is like... It's a good experience.
So from the... When they do a show, what's the majority of their set list? From what... Which albums? And did you get to hear the songs from Our Love to Admire?
Yeah.
Do they do a lot of songs off of it?
They did three off it. It was fantastic. It was fantastic.
Because they've got five now, right? Five albums.
I think four.
They have
five.
They've got.
Is there one in between Our Love to Admire and then their new one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's I haven't. There. I've listened. I don't even have that one. But yeah. Yeah, it was fairly spread. I think it was like three from their newest album, three from Our Love to Admire, and then, like, four from Antics and four from Turn on the Bright Lights.
Which one got the biggest reaction?
Evil. Automatically Evil. That's, like, Interpol's, like, hit song. Just people went nuts. It was crazy. Like, you couldn't even hear him singing because everyone was like, Rosemary. Everyone screamed it.
That's Daft J's favorite Interpol song, too. Yeah.
That song was in Grey's Anatomy.
Really?
That's right. Yeah,
it really was.
Huh.
And that's how she knew it. I was playing it in the car. I didn't remember it from the show. And she knew all, like, every scene from the show of what happened when. And she put it on to prove it to me. And it was exactly like...
Wow. I couldn't believe it. To see that episode.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. Huh. They have it at a house party.
It's at Meredith's house. And George, Dr. Yang, and Meredith are on the table. And they start dancing. And George is in the middle. And then they play that song.
That's fantastic.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that fun factoid, Daft J, for sneaking in there. Whose turn? Is it my turn now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This one was even harder because we did the episode on Weezer, and we both like Blue and Pinkerton.
Mm-hmm.
Pinkerton's the fan favorite. Again, the second album from the band.
Yep.
But I have to go with Blue. Only because it's the starting point of, like, if you want to introduce a person to a band, which is the album you give them, and that's how I kind of had to base it.
Yeah.
Because I love them both equally, but I feel like with Weezer Blue, you can play any of those classic songs and get a person to be like the Sweater Song, like classic, you know, or Say It Ain't So, classic. You can just play them randomly. And they work, or you can play it from beginning to end, and it works. Like, that's when you know an album is really good, when you can just pick any song off of it, or even shuffle the playlist, and they still go well together. Whereas I feel with Pinkerton, you can't do the same thing. You can't just play a song off of it without having the whole listening experience from the beginning to see the connectivity to it.
Yeah.
And when you get that, then you really appreciate it. So if I had to say to somebody, this is the, if you want to listen to Weezer, this is the one to listen to.
Yeah.
So I have to go with that one. What's your favorite song off of it again?
Off Blue?
Yeah.
I think My Name is Jonas.
Yeah, I think it's everyone's favorite song. And it starts off great. Like, just the way that album starts off, I think that's the key too.
It's such a strong start, yeah.
Every great album has to have that start that is perfect.
Something to hook you.
Yeah. Like, Nirvana has that, right? It smells like Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
As much as you don't like them. Do you like them too, Michaela, or you hate them?
Michaela should like them, based on her other musical tastes.
Okay. But, I mean, everyone knows that song. You can't deny it, right? And My Name is Jonas is almost on that. I wouldn't say it's as impactful, but when people hear it...
Everyone knows what song it is.
Yeah. It's you just press play and you don't got to touch it. So that'll be my third choice. I'll go with Weezer Blue.
That's a good one. All right, so I talked about this one too. It's The Thermals, The Body, The Blood, and The Machine. Their third album. So, first off, I love the idea of concept albums, one that tells a story, and then they chose an interesting concept to go after, of, like, Nazi Germany, and, like, a Jewish family kind of telling-ish both sides. It's loose, but it's interesting that it's just all a consistent theme there. I like that. You can definitely hear the recording quality. Got a lot better from this one than from their second album.
That's their third album?
Yeah.
That's one of the albums that I picked up from your recommendation. It's good.
Yeah.
I like it.
They got, I think it's the guitarist, Chris Walla from Death Cab for Cutie. He actually did all like the mastering and producing on it. So it's weird, but it's a cool crossover and sound there, I guess. And you can hear... Not his influence, but just, it's kind of like they went from garage, indie band, to like, oh, they're actually playing shows and doing good. And this was very much the album to launch them kind of into being a more well-known coast band, I guess. Yeah, it's just sweet.
Actually, after I had bought it and listened to it a couple times, I actually started to hear it in other places. I heard it in the Silver Snail downtown comic book shop.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if they were playing it on vinyl, but it was cool to now hear that voice and recognize where it came from.
Because yeah, it's such like a...
It's very unique sounding. Like, you can definitely pick it out, and it's unmistakable. Like, that's that band, for sure. So I didn't... After I had heard it in that setting, I'm like, yeah, that's definitely a unique band to listen to.
Yeah.
I like them. I like their sound, too. And I like their songs. I like bands that are like that, where their songs do a lot, but they're not overly long.
Yeah.
It's not like a chore to listen to it, to get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. My next pick. This is a tie for my favorite album. I'm going to go with the Pixies, Doolittle.
Yeah.
You listened to this before?
Yeah.
I love this album. To me, this is a perfect album. From the time you press play with the baser, the riff just right away gets you energized. And the first couple songs, like when I didn't realize it the first time I had listened to it, that songs had actually changed, because the breaks in between them were so smooth, and the transition, like the sequencing of it, was really good, especially the first three songs from, I think it's Tame to Wave of Mutilation. It's just a small drum break, and it goes right into the next track, and it almost feels like a continuation until you really get familiar with it. And they're all, it's not so much a concept album the way you've described it, but he definitely works with certain concepts throughout it. It has like an apocalyptic feel to it, like Monkey Goes to Heaven is talking about like world pollution and the effect that it has.
Yeah.
Then there's Here Comes Your Man, which is like the strangest song to have on this album. It's the one part of the album where it feels like it doesn't fit, but it's actually about an earthquake.
Huh.
If you pay close attention, you'll get the references. And then like Wave of Mutilation is like driving off of a cliff. Like all of this very like life ending stuff, but it doesn't sound as scary or ominous as it should, right? Is a lot of it's fun. Oh,
a lot of it, Pixies is like upbeat and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of upbeat stuff, and it's that precursor to what influenced Nirvana with that quiet, loud, quiet style.
Yeah,
and they said that a lot of what they did when they put together Nevermind, they were listening to the Pixies a lot.
Huh.
So. From the Pixies, their alternative rock style, really you can see the chain of influence that it had later on.
Yeah.
And Gouge Away, song about Samson and Delilah. It's awesome. They say it's about Samson and Delilah and David and Bathsheba. I didn't catch that reference, but he throws in a lot of Bible references in there too. So,
nice. I love that album. I can listen to it anytime someone pops it in.
If I don't know, it's one of those things, if you don't know what to listen to, or if I don't know what to listen to, I can just press play on that, and I'm good to go. Yeah, I'm good. So that's my tie for number one.
That's a good one.
Okay, next.
Okay, so mine is... I don't even know if it's... No, okay. I can justify it being on here, but it's the newest album. All these other ones I've known for years now.
Okay.
But this one, I mentioned that show in Tokyo, or where the doctor brings over the Tokyo bands. So he brought over this band called the Warikara, and it kind of changed like how I view music. And that's why, so I got some of their albums, and their newest one, I think it was 2014, they released it, called, I think it's Say Hate Songs. I don't know how you, it's Japanese, don't know how you say it.
They sing in Japanese too?
Yeah, that's why I put this album here. It is not actually a perfect album. There's one song that I inevitably end up skipping over. I listen to about the first 30 seconds and I'm like, yeah, I don't like this one, so I skip it. But just from the fact that it literally changed how I listen to music, how I want to play music, and like how I view live music.
You're gonna write in Japanese?
Yeah, just start. No, but like just, I don't know. Okay, the Japanese culture is very like, it's kind of strange. So a lot of the stuff musically they do, you don't see from North American bands. I don't know why fully, but it's just they can get away with a lot of like really interesting sounding stuff. And while I think some bands kind of do it weird, they do it so it's like actually fantastic. It's this weird like mix between funk bass lines and like shredding solos and like...
What are they called?
Awarikara.
Awarikara.
I'll write it down for you. You should listen. It's nuts.
Where can I find these albums other than illegally downloading them?
This one is available on iTunes.
Okay.
It is. There we go. Nice. But, yeah. And just from the fact that like it's a four-piece band, but when you listen to a recording, it sounds like there could be like 10 other instruments. And then after all of this, I still couldn't justify it being on there, because I was like, there's so many other albums that I do consider perfect that should be in my top five. But, as you know, lyrics are like a huge thing for me that like can make or break an album. If the lyrics sound stupid and the music is fantastic, I'm like not really feeling it. All of the words are Japanese, but he still hooked me. So that to me is really impressive.
But you don't know if the words are stupid or not.
But like,
he could be literally saying Jay Siegel's an idiot
but
in Japanese.
That literally means that the thing he's driving me with is the music. The thing that they're hooking me with is just the music, because I don't know what he's saying. His vocals are fantastic. He has like a high-ish voice, but he uses it really well. It's crazy. You have to listen to it. I know what you're thinking. Don't judge it. It's
no, it's fine. I like the fact that you're picking like different stuff. And it's stuff that for me, it'll be like, all the stuff I'm picking is like, everybody knows it already. It's kind of not as much of a surprise. Like, your stuff that you've listed, I'm like, okay, it's something new to listen to.
Yeah.
So that's good. So, Awarikara, Sai Hate Music? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, something. Saihate. Oh, songs. Not music. Sai Hate Songs.
Sai Hate Songs.
Yeah.
And what would you compare them to? Anything here?
Nothing.
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 Completely different.
Well, you can tell their influences. Like, there's some, like, the guitar is probably close to, like, something like Jimi Hendrix-esque. This weird, and the bass line is, like, super funky, and, like, they have this piano player, and it's nuts. It's nuts. You have to listen to it. It'll blow your mind.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a listen.
Yeah.
You piqued my interest. Alright, so my number one... what's so funny?
I don't know.
Why?
Nothing.
Okay. My number one choice. I couldn't deny it. I put it in today and I was like, okay, how much do I actually like this album? What's the Story, Morning Glory? Oasis.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's just every song on it is an anthem. It's the one band where if they, I wish they could put aside their differences, because both brothers are idiots.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I dislike about the band, is that the two main guys in it are, like...
Not even just with each other, with, like, everyone. Yeah. Everyone who came across their path, they had, like, beef with.
Yeah, they had that attitude, that rock star attitude. But, man, their first two albums, in my opinion, are so good. I know some people have, like, strong opinions. They either love Oasis or they think they're stupid and they're trash. But from beginning to end, the album's so much fun to listen to.
That one has Roll With It, right?
It's got Roll With It. That one's my favorite. It's got Don't Look Back in Anger, Wonderwall. Any time of year, any type of mood I'm in, there's something on that album that I can listen to. And there's... I found out, I didn't know, that Cast No Shadow, in the liner notes, it's apparently inspired by the genius of Richard Ashcroft. You know who Richard Ashcroft is?
No.
He is the lead singer from... another British band that were their contemporaries, which was The Verve.
Huh.
And they had put out, around the same time, or a little bit after, was the album that had Bittersweet Symphony, which was considered, like, that album itself was considered a classic. But I didn't know that he had written a song inspired by him. Because Noel is not a guy who likes to give out that much credit to
anyone.
Contemporaries. Yeah. It's just like the Beatles or the Smiths or the bands.
The ones you're gonna have to, yeah.
The bands that he grew up listening to that he was a fan of, but I thought that was cool. And I love that song. But there isn't a song on this album that I would get rid of. This to me was a perfect album. And it was actually ranked, I don't know if it was from Enemy Magazine or from some British magazine, that it's the best British album of the last 30 years.
Wow.
Which is, when you consider all the stuff that's come out,
yeah,
it's pretty high praise.
Uh-huh.
So, it didn't get actually great critical reviews when it came out, but this album put them, at the time, as like the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
So, I love that. Do you own it?
I have it on iTunes.
Do you like Oasis?
Yeah.
So?
I find the problem is, every time I think of them, Champagne Supernova comes on, and I don't like that song.
How come?
I don't know, it's just like, I can't put my finger on it. I have no logical reason not to like it, it's just, it doesn't strike anything with me, and I'm just like, hey, let's get on with it.
That's like a very psychedelic song.
Yeah, but at the same time, Roll With It is like, one of my favorite songs. So... I don't know. I guess I'm in between on Oasis.
Yeah. That was one of the album or bands that, even when I was listening to everything but rock music, their songs still, I still remember them from when I was a kid. So when I had, this was one of the first rock albums that I went back and bought to listen to. And yeah, like every song, just, it didn't take long for me to remember the songs, the reasons why I liked them, but how good their other stuff was. I didn't like... Some of their later stuff was not necessarily my favorite, but their first two albums are classics.
Yeah.
And it was... He had said... It was interesting. He had said something about how Nirvana... I keep going back to Nirvana this episode, but they were the biggest band at the time, but this was a guy who had everything but didn't want to be alive. Like, he was so pissed off about his life and didn't want, you know, always complaining. Whereas on their case, he said, we were kids who had nothing, and we just made songs to make you feel better, or to be happy to be alive.
Yeah.
So it's a good, like, juxtaposition of comparing, like, if you're in this type of mood, you had this happening, but right after, as soon as Kurt Cobain died,
exited. Yeah.
A couple weeks after or something, I think they released Live Forever.
Really?
As one of their singles, yeah. Oh,
amazing.
So... It was a definitely like a change of the guard kind of thing of what was happening in popular rock music.
Yeah.
So that's my choice. You girls have any selections of favorite albums? Do you have any, Daft J? You've been quiet. Nothing?
Mm-mm.
No shout-outs? How about you, Michaela?
I think I have just a favorite.
Nothing?
No.
What? What about like Green Day, Dookie?
Yeah, that would for sure probably be one of mine.
So what are some of your perfect albums that you didn't list? What are some of those, like, honorary mentions?
The thing that the Japanese band beat out was Weezer Pinkerton. That was going to be... Okay, Weezer Pinkerton has had more consistent. It's been there. It was the first album I stole from our older sister and stuff. It's just... Listening to it, I recognize. Love it. Fantastic. So good. So personal. So, like, just hits you. But it didn't impact me musically, kind of like this Japanese band did, because it, like, changed. It changed how I view playing music. That's important. And for an album to do that?
That's important, yeah.
That's especially huge. Does
Rivers hate Pinkerton?
Yeah.
That's putting it out? That's the only...
I don't know if he does it at this point, but, because it was so, like, different from the Blue album. So, wait, no. Just go back and listen to the episode, you jerk. Okay. So I had Weezer Pinkerton up there. Rise Against the Suffering and the Witness. That is absolutely a perfect album. And that one came really close too. Because I was like, okay, Rise Against was my favorite band throughout, like, all of grade school and stuff.
High school too, wasn't it?
Yeah. And, like, that is a perfect album. I think everyone who's a Rise Against fan agrees that that's their best.
What's the title?
The Suffering and the Witness. So that one's up there. Do you know the band Gorillaz? Have I ever talked to you about? Yeah. So they have one album, The Fall.
The first one?
It is their... I think it's their fourth one. Not as big as, like, widely released. But that, to me, is a perfect album. Can listen to it at any point. And then I had Green Day Warning. That one, every song on it is fantastic. So good. Oh my goodness. I can't think about that song, with that CD, without smiling.
Which one? What's the cover of that album?
It's the three of them walking. And just, like, black and white, and then in green and orange it says Warning. And then last one, just on the list I have here, Strokes, Is This It. That to me is a flawless album. Listen to it all the way through every time.
Do you have the British release of it, or the...
I have the New York City Cops one.
Yeah, that's the original.
That they kind of were like, oop, wait, 9/11, can't release that.
Yeah, see, I the only version that I had was the one that they released here. So later on, when I really got into the band and there was this song, New York City Cops, and I hadn't heard it, I felt like such an idiot. With this being one of my favorite bands and one of their most famous songs, I didn't know, because the album version they released here didn't have it.
But I have a lot of respect for them, too.
Why?
I don't know. I think that was a good call. Because, like, when was it released? It was released. It was supposed to be released really close to when the whole, like, World Trade Center thing happened. So they took it off their album. I'm like, I don't know. I think that was a good call.
Were they released... first, maybe, I think they made a splash first in, like, Britain. Because that was the album cover with the girl with the glove.
Yeah.
And then here the album cover was completely different.
Yeah, I remember seeing that and being like, what the heck is this? And I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is their first album, but released here.
Yeah. And they say, from what I've read about it, because at that time I wasn't paying attention to anything of the Strokes. But they said that as far as rock music was concerned, that really reinvigorated what was happening on that scene when they came out. Because it was like a vintage kind of garage sound, but something that hadn't been around for a while, but new again. Something old that they had made new again. And, like, you can hear their influence in so many bands that came after it. Like Arctic Monkeys, like I said before. Even early Kings of Leon has that type of feel. I don't think people who know Kings of Leon now would know that, but their early stuff is very Strokes-like. I'm trying to think of what else. It's not coming to my mind now, but yeah, they definitely had a huge impact. But I didn't like the later stuff from the Strokes.
Yeah.
And the band didn't seem as cohesive as they did on those first couple albums. Would you agree?
Yeah. Well, because, like, I'd say Strokes is very much a solid three and a half minute song band.
Yes.
Where you can't really imagine them going much longer.
And I wouldn't want them to.
Yeah. Yeah. Because their songs are so upbeat and so, like, high energy that it's... You can't have, like, 10-minute songs that are just, like, keep...
That was the thing, too, that I... As a... The Oasis albums afterwards, their songs were good, but then they got too big for themselves, where they felt like they had to make their songs 7 minutes, but it wasn't... Wasn't progression in the song where it changed as it played. Like, you listen to some old Led Zeppelin songs, and their songs are long, but there's so many changes as the song goes on that you don't feel that length of it.
Yeah, it's progressive.
Whereas Oasis started to feel a little bit bloated.
Mm-hmm.
But the songs were good, but unfortunately just way too long.
You just have to edit them to be shorter.
Yeah.
What other stuff was on your list?
I was very tempted to put Radiohead, The Bends.
I know, I saw it there, and I was waiting.
That's, the reason why I didn't was because I'm a Radiohead fan, but I don't love all their later stuff like some people do.
Yeah.
I really like The Bends and OK Computer. That's what I like from them, but mm-hmm. that's an album where you can play from beginning to end. I would say that's a perfect album. Musically, it's probably the best of what I had in my pile as far as what they created.
Mm-hmm.
Their craft is amazing, but it just doesn't have that same Any Given Moment sing-along appeal. Because your favorite albums have to be also something that you know so well inside and out that you can just, any moment in time, you just want to sing along.
No matter what song comes on, you know which song is going to come after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I can't say either that Never Mind I know word for word, but as I played it, I knew what was coming next.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel like a chore listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
And The Bends doesn't either, but it you have to kind of be in that mood or that zone for their style of music.
Yeah.
Are these your top rock band things?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, if there was hip-hop included in it, it'd be much harder.
Pardon? Do you think it'd be unfair? You think hip-hop would just, like, dominate?
Well, I think just because there's that youthful connection to it,
mm-hmm.
and because I listened to them so much and I memorized those albums in a different way, that, it would probably be unfair, and I'd have to explain why I like them in so much more detail.
Because you connect certain music with certain memories and stuff, so it's like...
That too. So it would have been a little bit lopsided, and I wouldn't have known how to compare... You know, a Nas album that I love to something like Weezer. Like, there's very difficult to rationalize which one would be better to me.
Yeah.
So I'd have to probably make a separate list. Other album that I have here, which I've been listening to a lot recently, is an older one from 1987.
Mm.
It's The Cure, Disintegration.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one.
My cousin is a huge Cure fan, and he got me... He let me sample some other stuff when I would be at his place, and I didn't get what the appeal was to that type, why he loved them so much with the other stuff that he listened to.
Mm-hmm.
But I went out, I bought the album, and I think you would like it.
Hmm.
I don't know how familiar you are with The Cure. I've listened
to nothing by them. I know the name, but that's it.
That Disintegration, check it out, because it's an album that has a specific mood, a very specific, musically it feels themed. I don't know if the content of the album is so much, but there's a vibe throughout it that each song goes into itself so well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of these, I don't know if you know that song, Pictures of You. It's one of the most popular song, but there's a radio edit of it that, like, it goes into the song like after 30 seconds. But on this album, the album cut is so much better, but the intro to it is 2 minutes long.
Oh.
And it just builds and builds and builds. And so that when he comes in with the vocals, it even though you've waited 2 minutes for it, it hits you so much harder. And his writing style is, like, very poetic and very... I don't know how to describe it. Even the way he looks is not what you would think of what the guy looks like.
Oh, those are my favorite. Sometimes it ruins it. But
he's extremely, like, emo and gothic, and you would think, like, that's not the guy who sings those songs. Like, imagine...
Is this him?
Yeah.
Ooh,
like, imagine Tim Burton, like the way Tim Burton looks with the hair, but with him powdered face and red lipstick.
Yeah.
So it's nothing that you would imagine, but the music is so, I don't know, it really evokes an emotion out of you. So check out The Cure, Disintegration. I'd like to see how it would affect your songwriting style. I'm trying to think of anything else that I left out. Not coming to mind. There's some older stuff like The Clash, London Calling.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the best albums I've ever listened to. But that didn't make the cut because of the timing that it came out. I left it off. And a Led Zeppelin album was on there too. But again, that was like 1970-something.
Yeah.
So that's it. Those are my top five.
Which one am I missing? I have Nirvana, Nevermind, Oasis, Pixies, Weezer. What was your last one?
Arctic Monkeys.
Good job. Yeah. And I actually really like the new Arctic Monkeys album, too. The latest one that came. Yeah.
Yeah.
You like it now?
It's growing. Okay. It's growing on you? Because of you, the whole band is starting. Their first album, Don't Believe the Lies or whatever.
Whatever people say.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
that thing. That one is slowly but surely coming close to a perfect album. I don't know if I'll ever actually view it fully as one, but they're... The list of songs that I'd skip on that album are progressively getting slower and slower, or lower and lower.
Sometimes when you step away from an album you've given a chance to, and then you come back to it and realize, like, wait a second, that's actually really good.
It started getting some of, like, his lyrics, and then some of their guitar stuff, some of their bass lines stuck in my head. So I was like, okay, this album has more to it than...
Yeah. Even for me, when I first heard it, I'm like, what's so special about this? I don't get why people have raved about this, and then... Again, same thing, slow. And now I listen to it, it's like beginning to end. Just press play. But there's stuff, the one thing I like about Arctic Monkeys more than The Strokes is that where they've changed their style and have tried new things or progressed to a different type of writing, it's actually gotten better as a band.
Yeah.
Whereas The Strokes, I feel, it's not quite as listenable when they try to do something different.
Yeah. And like... Arctic Monkeys, for as much as they have changed, he's still Alex Turner.
Yeah.
They still have, like, those kind of like Arctic Monkey hooks.
Yes.
That draw you in the song. Like, they're catchy and stuff.
Such a clever songwriter.
Yeah.
Very clever. Keeps you coming back. There's only one album from them. It's their third one where they change their sound quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of... I like it because it's them, but it's not something that I would ever say that you have to listen to this one.
Yeah.
But if you like the band, you need to own it, kind of thing. All right, cool. That was good. I like going through top fives. It's difficult, but...
So difficult.
It's good. Next time we should maybe do top five movies. That might be even harder.
No, just all six Star Wars. There it is. I'm done.
All right, awesome.
Excluding.
Thank you guys for listening to our return of the original Cave of Solitude hosts. We will have Daff J back soon because I know everyone, that's their favorite host of the Cave of Solitude. If you want to email us and give us your five favorite albums.
Oh, actually, that'd be interesting.
We want to hear what those are. It doesn't matter what kind of music you like. Even if it's dance music, EDM is what they call it.
Dance if you cannot. Yeah. I've actually listened to that song so many times now.
Have you listened to it now?
Yeah.
I have a buddy of mine who that's what his top five albums would be. They'd probably all be like a Chris Shepherd or...
He hooked me though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to hear if anybody has their list of their five albums or something that we left out. Email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com and we will... share it with people, as well as you can go to the website caveofsolitude.com and post on our page, and it will post it to go along with this episode. So thanks again for listening. I'm Eric Anthony
and I'm Jay Siegel.
Take care, everybody.